Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain and guests.
Welcome along to the New Zealand Tech Podcast. We're at episode 162. I'm Paul Spain.
And I'm Bill Bennett.
Great to have you here, as usual, Bill.
Ah, it's nice, Paul.
Much appreciated.
I like being here.
Great. Well, thank you. I'm not sure whether it's that which bit you like, but I'm glad you enjoy it.
It's fun.
That's the main thing. Likewise, that's why I'm here. Now, a lot going on in the local tech world, particularly around telecommunications. So I think let's chat through some of those things first. Mm-hmm. Now, Telecom New Zealand, they've had this Australian business unit for a long time, AAPT. You remember how long ago that they
late '90s. I was in Australia, I think, when that happened.
Yeah, okay.
And it was part of a plan to build up infrastructure assets. I mean, remember at the time that Telecom and Chorus are one thing. And to some extent, the AAPT assets are the kind of thing that Telecom doesn't own in New Zealand anymore. So it makes sense if the company's turning into a retail telecommunications provider. I think Simon Muta wants to focus on the things that make money rather than the sort of the utility part of the business, which is part of that. And the other thing is they've been trying to get rid of AAPT forever, probably best part of a decade, I would imagine. They paid more than $2 billion for the company, and I think they got about 20% of the asking price when they sold it. But they still got more than anyone expected.
Yeah, $450 million Australian.
That'll pay for Christmas drinks.
They'd already sold
the consumer part
to IINet, yeah. And they've sold the rest of it to TPG.
Yeah, and TPG is building quite a portfolio over in Australia as a general telecommunications company.
Mm, mm. So that's 2.2 billion Australian that they originally spent buying it. I don't know that was a worthwhile investment when you add up how much return and so on they've taken over the years.
No,
I guess they're probably pretty pleased to have been able to move on and leave this behind them.
They've still got 5% of the VHA mobile phone company in Australia, so it means there's still some presence over there.
Mm.
But apparently that company is for sale anyway, so I don't know how that works with Telecom's 5%, but I imagine if it gets bought by someone, that'll be another cash day for Telecom. And in fact, it's got to be seen in the light of what's happened in the last year or so with Telecom. They've got rid of a few small bits and pieces out of Geni, like Aldhouse, and there was a consulting company who's had some Italian-sounding name that I can't remember right now, that was sold too earlier in the year. About 80 consultants who were part of Geni moved on. And then they bought Rivera, and they've probably lost 1,200 staff during the course of the last 12 months. So what's happened is that Simon Muta hasn't hung around getting the company into some kind of shape to compete, really. And let's face it, it's about competing with Vodafone.
Well, it is now, and Vodafone are such a huge entity now that they've brought Telstra Clear into the fold. They really cover a huge number of bases. They've got all sorts of their infrastructure in terms of connections to physical copper and fiber and
the hybrid
fiber cable network. So they've actually got a lot of infrastructure in the ground. So
they have, and it's interesting that the two companies seem to be on slightly different trajectories about where they're going as well. Vodafone is very much turning into the New Zealand arm of a multinational, focused on servicing multinational clients at the enterprise level, at the business level. And its mobile business is extraordinarily strong still. I think in terms of market share, Vodafone's up at about 45% of the connections. But in terms of revenue, it's probably nearer 60% of mobile revenues.
Well, your average revenue per user seems to have, you know, continued to be strong.
So is telephones.
I don't know whether you could say it's improving, because the costs of connections and so on is coming down, and of course people are using more data. But the competition that we've seen, particularly from 2Degrees, I'm sure has actually, you know, must have led to a drop in that average revenue per user in general across the board, or certainly when you weigh up what the subsidies cost them that they include in their plans.
I don't think 2Degrees has had much of a negative impact on Vodafone's income. They will have lost some business, but
it's more the cost of the plans that have come down. Yeah, though. I mean, yeah. I look at a lot of businesses, and my own included, and have seen our average spend with the mobile carrier, which in our case is pretty much all with Vodafone in that mobile sense, be half what it was going back 2 years or so.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's true. But Vodafone manages to squeeze costs out of it too. The thing is the Vodafone and Telecom are very much more equal size than they were, say, 2 years ago, and the competition's going to be quite tough between those two. But they're not necessarily heading for the same customers in each of their markets, which is something to keep in mind. There are places where they really do go head to head. I mean, they're going head to head, for example, selling high speed broadband. But in general, in some of their markets, they're not head-to-head. But anyway, the thing is, Telecom's actually been through a huge transformation since getting rid of Chorus isn't quite the right way of putting it, since the demerger with Chorus.
Sure.
And they really have evolved into a very retail-focused telco.
Mm. Now, one of the other things in the telecommunications space that is fascinating is the emergence of 2Degrees.
Yeah.
And they've been quite innovative in some of their offerings into the market. And the latest one, which we became aware of sort of late last week, and there was a lot of discussion over the weekend. Actually, the Geek Zone forums were full of comment really around these new plans that have been launched by 2Degrees, the concept of being able to share everything.
Now, makes sense.
Well, it's quite unique. So normally in the past, when you've had some sort of and I mean, we haven't seen too many of these plans to be fair, but. If you've had a plan where you can, maybe you can share a number of minutes, or you can share a block of data, that sort of makes some sense. But these plans are different in that you can buy an unlimited calling plan, and then for I think it's $20 at the moment, they're going to bump it up to $25 once the initial period is over. For $20, you can add somebody else on who also actually gets unlimited calling. Within that plan, and so it's not splitting up a block of 1,000 minutes you've bought and giving everyone 500. Actually, for $20, the other user actually gets unlimited calls. That's pretty impressive.
It is. But look, calls, or as the industry calls them, voice minutes, are going the way of texts, and that is there. These days, you pretty much get unlimited texts on any mobile plan. And if you don't get unlimited, you get more than anyone's going to use. And I don't know if it's happening in New Zealand, but worldwide, the number of text messages being sent is actually starting to decline on a per-user basis anyway.
Sure. And I mean, there's various technologies that are obviously facilitating that. And I guess with calling, that's your point that you're coming to in terms of the calling number, or the minutes that we do are dropping off,
and it's starting to become commoditized, and it's going to disappear. And at some point, the phone companies are going to sell you a pipe with so much data a month, and maybe unlimited data, but it'll be a data pipe with X amount of data, and calls and text will be just bundled into that at no extra cost.
And that's sort of what it looks like now with what 2degrees are doing with these plans. So just a quick run through. So their basic share everything plan is $69, and it gives unlimited calls and text. There are some terms and conditions are around that. I don't think you can hook it up to a put that SIM card into a computer and have it auto dialing New Zealand 24/7 or sending unlimited automated text. But you know, in terms of an individual user using it, and then for $20 you can add on up to four extra people. So if we add that up, you're talking for $150. You could have four people with unlimited calling, and then you can choose whether or not to share the 1.5 gigs worth of data that comes with that $69 share everything plan with everyone, or you can just share, for instance, the unlimited calls and text, and then buy extra data on a per user basis.
But that's where the money is in that plan, is that you don't get a huge amount of data for your $150 a month. I mean, 1.5 gigs sounds a lot, but you can chew through that in a day if you're hooking up a laptop to a mobile phone. And that's it's like I said, it's moving to a point where you're actually paying for the data, and the voice and text is, it's not quite free yet, but it's getting there, we're moving towards that model. The other thing that struck me when I saw that release from 2degrees is they must have some pretty good back-end systems to look after that, because I remember from years of reporting on technology, particularly reporting on enterprise computing and so on, just how even simple mobile billing systems can cost mobile phone companies a fortune. Now, obviously, enterprise computing costs have changed, and there's cloud, and there's all kinds of dynamics that have changed there.
Sure.
But still, that seems to be quite a complex thing to manage at the billing level.
Yeah, well, I think one of the advantages that 2degrees probably have is that they didn't have a whole lot of legacy. They're new into the market. Yeah. They've come in with some newer technology. They don't have this big challenge that we've seen others go through, where they have to leap from one old system to a new system and maybe keep the old system running for years to overlap because of some complexities and so on. So they've got a new platform, and you know, they've managed to get it to do and be, well, to be flexible for them to come up with these new sorts of things, which sometimes can be a real challenge from that perspective.
I think what it's going to do is it's going to shake up the small business mobile market, which at the moment still seems to be dominated by Vodafone.
Sure. There's an interesting thing though around these prices. So if you're one user paying $69 for unlimited calls and text to New Zealand and Australia, I'll add, actually sounds like pretty good value when that includes 1.5 gigs worth of data. $69 one person, not bad. But if you spread that out across four, you're talking just over $37 per user to get unlimited calling. It was only I think the first plan that we had that really gave you that unlimited calling was, you know, last year, and that was 2degrees that brought it into the market, and it was over $100 for that particular plan. And you know, now we're talking about being able to get the unlimited calls and text for, you know, between $37 and $69, depending on how many users you've got. But you've got that limit of being able to add four, so a total of five users that can use this.
Yeah, but there's a point that has been overlooked by anyone who's looked at this, and that is this is now cheaper than getting a landline. It's cheaper than the monthly rental for a landline, which only gives you unlimited calling within your local calling zone.
That's right, and you've got to pay for mobile calls on top, right?
Yeah, but that local landline that you pay $45 whatever it is a month to Telecom, it's on a technology which has been in the ground for more than 100 years now. So that, you know, and which, in other words, it's been paid back. So it tells you, it basically tells you what a bad deal that is.
Well, this is interesting, and that's a, I mean, it's a good point. When you look at the people that are paying for a landline, and then they're paying for some sort of prepaid mobile, maybe they don't use it a lot because they're scared about how expensive it is. At these sort of prices, it starts to come into that realm where those that have been, you know, that have stayed clear of mobile technology because they've thought it's just a bit too expensive, could dump their landline and come on board. And, potentially in some cases it will be less.
And it's people who ration their use of mobile as well because they're worried the bill will run out of control as well. So I think it actually changes more than just the mobile market.
Well, I'll be interested to see what the uptake of this is. And, of course, we won't know anytime soon. We haven't heard really for some time from 2Degrees how many customers they've got. You know, we had that. We had the announcement going back before Eric Hertz passed away, where they'd hit the million customers. I don't think there've been any. Have there been any announcements since then?
No, but the Commerce Commission put out a report earlier this year, which had estimated numbers in the mobile market, and I can't remember off the top of my head what they were. I do remember that 2Degrees was put at 20% of the market, and Vodafone I think was 43 and Telecom 37. And if I've got those numbers right, I think I deserve a prize because that's pulled out of my ailing memory banks. But I can't remember what the absolute numbers of users were.
So it was, it was back in early August when we got the, early August that we got the 1 million customers. No, that sounds far too recent.
Yeah.
It's the time.
I think it was August the year before.
Time flies by. That sounds better. August last year.
Yeah.
Looking at their growth, because they were up to 950,000 in June last year. So it's sort of slowed down. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if that's it's getting harder for them now to start acquiring new customers. Of course, the fact that they've just signed that deal with Apple, and on Friday they launch the iPhone 5S, the 5C, and I think the what's the other one they've got? The 4S. So they're going to have those products available. That probably gives them a better opportunity of penetrating the business market, and because there are people that won't have a connection unless they can get the relevant free phones with their sign up.
And it's still the phone to get. The other thing I think we need to just run over with 2Degrees is how do they reach their customers? I mean, I don't watch broadcast TV anymore. Do they still advertise heavily on television?
They do. I guess the point is their TV ads are usually pretty good and pretty entertaining. But of course, those that do watch TV tend to skip past ads. Maybe more and more often. And those that don't have an ability to skip past the ads. That segment, people with less technology in their home, probably a smaller budget to spend. And what 2Degrees, probably needs to do now is to be, starting to target the higher end customers. How do they get those big business customers on? How do they get the individual users that don't mind, spending $100 a month?
How do they reach me? I see Telecom advertising and Vodafone advertising as I get around town. I see it in the occasional print things that I still read, but I don't see 2Degrees in places I go.
That's interesting, isn't it? And maybe that's because they made a point of targeting particular segments, but in terms of being profitable, they need to move up the value chain, as it were. And deliver to us, I guess, to a at that higher end side of things. So, it'll be fascinating to to know some of their internal figures on where they do well and where they don't. But full credit to them for doing some good stuff here anyway with these new plans. No doubt if these have much of an impact on the rest of the market, or maybe before they have any impact, we'll see Telecom and Vodafone move in with some competitive offerings. Much like what we've seen in that discount prepay space with those monthly $19 plans and the $16 plan from Skinny. That's an extremely competitive space. And at the moment, they've doubled the amount of data they're giving away. So for $16 or $19, depending on who you're with, you can get a gigabyte worth of data on a prepay plan and 103 hours worth of phone calls and
it's more than I get on my plan
and a big bunch of texts for a pretty small figure in the scheme of things. Now those are due to, I think, run out at the end of January, but it'd be fascinating whether any of those things keep going. Now, one other telecommunications related topic, which I think people will be interested in, is we've seen the launch finally, and this has been talked about for a long time. I know they've had this in the US and in various forms as well, but it's a national database of stolen handsets.
Yeah, about time. But it's a great step. I'm really pleased to see it.
So what's the benefit for consumers? It's all about blacklisting those stolen phones, isn't it? So yeah. If someone pickpockets you or beats you up on the street and runs off with your phone, they won't be able to do a whole lot with it as soon as you get it blacklisted, other than pop it on eBay and sell it to somebody in another country.
Yeah, but I think even that is in another country is easy. I'd say even in New Zealand would be difficult.
So it's gonna stop that sort of reselling of stolen and lost phones locally. But until we get a global database, which I imagine would be some time off, if ever, then you wouldn't be able to completely shut this thing down. And I imagine. There would be some markets that just wouldn't participate. Even if we had an international plan going, say, between New Zealand and Australia and other countries, there'd still be some markets that would probably take advantage of
a lot of phones in North Korea. Of it.
Yeah, maybe. So,
I bet they have a good network.
This has been an initiative, I think, that the telecommunications, the TCF, the Telecommunications Carriers Forum, have been involved in bringing the industry together on that. They've certainly been commenting about it enough if they're actually behind it. But good to see Telecom, Vodafone and 2degrees doing something together anyway.
It's great. It's great to see this happen. And it's going to stop people getting beaten up for their phones, I think.
Well, I certainly hope so. Yeah. It's a very expensive item for people to be carrying around. If they're carrying around a new iPhone, a high-end smartphone from any vendor, that can be a thousand dollar item. And
for a lot of people, it's more than it's well over a week's wages.
So no, good stuff. Now the other thing we heard, we didn't get a chance to chat about this last week, but ultra fast broadband, the uptake has taken an upward turn, and we're really starting to see this grow locally. The fiber network that's being the government's behind sort of getting rolled out we're starting to see customers coming on board. What do you think we've seen that change? Is this to do with Telecom
and Vodafone,
Vodafone coming into the market over the last few months?
I think it's got a lot to do with that. I think also there's a kind of network effect with as much with fiber as there was with... Do you remember when faxes first came along? If you were the first person to buy a fax, you didn't have anyone to send a fax to.
Wasn't much use, right? Yeah,
but soon as a critical mass of people had faxes, it became something you had to have to do business communications. Well, the same kind of thing applies to video conferencing and unified comms and so on, is that businesses will find that once their suppliers get UFB and can start doing WYSI stuff, then they might need it. Or once their customers get it, you know, there's a kind of snowballing effect. Some of the smaller LFCs, I forget which one it is, it might be North Power, are up to about 7% uptake across their network.
Yeah, I think in Whangarei, because they've been able to roll out, you know, the whole network and, you know, lickety split, they've done it very, very quickly.
Well, they had most of the ground to start with.
You know, they were well prepared to get underway. And they haven't had a too spread out audience to communicate with. Maybe that's helped them. I mean, certainly, you know, I think those that are in Whangarei and Northland, that have got access to it, people will be talking to each other, and when everyone can get it, there's likely to be a lot more conversations. Yeah. Whereas we look at a city the size of Auckland, or any of the big cities around the country, it's a huge job to roll out ultra fast broadband and get that, fiber optic, cable into the ground across the city, and it, in most cases, is a multi-year project.
My house is still not on the map, so 3 years out, I still won't get it, and or at least on the current maps, I won't.
Mm.
And I think that's also an issue, is that the rollout might not be going. Well, the rollout itself is going quite fast, but the actual getting someone connected once the fiber's gone past. It's actually still quite slow, and you hear stories of people waiting weeks to get a connection.
Yeah, I think in the more, you know, in the very simple cases, I don't think it's as bad, but certainly where you've got any sort of complexity, then that adds a whole lot of extra work into the process. So if it's a business premises, and there's got to be some sort of resource consent or paperwork to be signed off by building owners.
Oh, and where are you going to get into the building? All those houses in the back sections where you've got to go past three or four other people's property with a cable, and they've got to get permission.
Rules and so on around right? So that can be pretty frustrating if you're in that boat. But I guess once it's done, right? This is sort of a once in a lifetime type thing. Once the fiber optic is into your premises, then you should be sorted.
I reckon, though, that the whole project's starting to get some momentum. I mean, well, we won't talk tonight about the political stuff that's going on around the build. But that aside, the project itself is getting momentum. It's getting taken up. It's making a real difference to a lot of small businesses. They're not doing, from what I see, they're not doing dramatically exciting applications with the thing other than video. But it is starting to penetrate small businesses, and they are starting to see productivity gains and so on. So
absolutely. Well, and there are, I think, each business will be different in terms of the things, but, you know, you and I were talking earlier about, PABX, it's traditional phone systems that a business will have. Yeah. And, you know, the need to have this, basically a mini phone exchange within your premises. And when you've got ultra fast broadband, well, that sort of stuff can happen in the cloud. It's much, much easier to do that. And you can have a completely cloud delivered, solution. And, you know, not only does it bring down your cost, but it increases the sort of capabilities you can have, and you can, you know, go and work from, all sorts of locations, pick up your phone and take it with you. The video conferencing you talk about, you know, I mean, some of these things, once we get used to those, we'll get really used to them, and we'll wonder how we operated without them. But it does take a little while for the market to mature, for all of those other auxiliary offerings to become broadly available and to, you know, fit perfectly within the New Zealand context.
And then there's the cloud.
and I mean, the migration of data that's traditionally set on people's local servers and systems and so on to the cloud, that just continues. But having ultra-fast broadband will certainly accelerate a lot of those situations and make use cases that didn't really add up before be things that actually really work with the cloud. And, we're seeing situations where businesses that have wanted to have their entire systems duplicated and have been very, very expensive to do that in the past can now, with some of the newer software and ultra-fast broadband, really brings down the cost of doing that.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, so really lots going on in the world of telecommunications. Now, a few products that that have been coming through. There's a lot that we've looked at throughout the year, but last week HP sort of put on a little bit of a presentation and showed off some of their newest products that are just starting to hit the market, particularly in the consumer space. Which one sort of stood out to you, Bill?
There were three things that caught my eye. There was a laptop with, I've forgotten the name of the proprietary technology that was in that laptop now.
So this is the new Ultrabook from HP.
Yeah, yeah.
Touchscreen based.
Yeah.
They've got it because they've got a number of different products sort of coming in there. They've got one which is similar and has some similarities in some way to the Asus T100 that we've talked about, which is sort of two-in-one, yeah. Splits out to tablet and snaps together to be a laptop. And also the new Spectra Ultrabook. Was that the that was the one?
Yeah. There was the I can't remember the name of the thing. The tablet, the 7-inch tablet, the Android tablet.
Oh, the we were chatting about that earlier. The Slate Extreme. That's so the name, yeah. Earlier in the year, we had that that low end Android HP Slate. They called it. I think came into the market $229, and it's available now. I think the price has even dropped further. But the Extreme is sort of a higher end offering for them, right?
Yeah.
I think coming out at $349.
Yeah, what it is it's in effect, it's a low end Slate with a low end 7-inch tablet, but with a real brand, you know, an HP brand, a brand that people will recognize, be comfortable with. And it's in that sort of budget tablet space, but just.
Yeah, $349. Yeah. So, I mean, they've really upped the specs from the original Slate 7, which was a real budget device at that $229 price point. So they've bumped it up from a performance perspective. The speakers and so on, and they've added a stylus in there as well. So you've got a pretty nice device there.
Yeah, and it's the sort of price where, you know, $340, it's not quite throwaway, but it's not going to hurt you if it breaks.
No, it's not crazy money, is it? Now, also the HP, so there was the HP Spectra Ultrabook. That's actually similar to the last generation Ultrabook I'm using here in terms of size and styling. 13.3-inch full HD display, but being this new generation of Ultrabook, to carry that Ultrabook name, it has to have a touchscreen. So we're going to see a lot more of these, but this is one of the new ones coming through. And 9 hours worth of battery life for a nice, pretty stylish, thin and light Ultrabook, sort of, you know, aimed at the higher end from a consumer perspective.
Yeah.
And I mean, some of the specs reflect that, but it's launching in New Zealand market at $3,000 retail, so it very much is at the top end, but it does fit within the consumer product space from HP. I'm a bit surprised about that pricing, to be fair. It seems like a big leap from their previous generation. Sure, it's got your super fast drive and its SSD and so on, but it does seem to be...
That's a MacBook Pro price.
And it's not a 13.3-inch MacBook Pro price. You're talking the 15-inch. So... Yeah, that bit sort of – it did really surprise me actually about HP's pricing, because I think the last generation, it didn't have some of those features, and it wasn't probably quite as light, but not – actually very similar. Certainly didn't have the battery life, but that comes from the new fourth generation, Core i5. It just seems too much to me. But, hey, we'll see. I'm sure the price will come down in time as well.
Yeah.
Certainly if they're not selling the numbers. But it seems to me like a little bit of profit-taking there.
Well, yeah. And HP need that at the moment.
Yeah.
But the other thing that really impressed me at the launch was the all-in-one, which could be tipped over. So it's almost like a tabletop. And it's quite interesting because you can type on it. you know, type on the screen instead of a keyboard. It's, I thought that was quite a interesting take on the all-in-one. Did you see
No, I did quite like that. I mean, we're seeing more of these all-in-one sort of systems, which is a touch screen, you know, a large touch screen monitor. You know, they've varied from the sort of 21 and a half inch up to 27 or so, and I think they're coming out with a bigger one possibly as well. Is there a 32 inch coming through? But definitely the a 27 coming in there. So yeah, quite nice. But that that ability to actually fold that screen down so it's almost on the flat is interesting. In terms of whether it's going to get a lot of use like that, it's interesting to have that, that option and that capability.
I stood at that and was typing on the virtual keyboard that you can get going in on Windows 8. And I was thinking, this is actually, it's a different kind of computing. It actually works. I mean, you probably would do your back in if you stood there typing on that all day.
Oh, for sure.
But you know what I thought? I thought there's some applications, some sort of touch applications, which that makes practical, that wouldn't before be the case. I'll give you an example. A keyboard, a musical keyboard. You could put a musical keyboard on that and have, you know, you could actually play it like a keyboard. Whereas, you know, normally you see a musical keyboard on screen and it's kind of tiny and a bit grotty and not really all that great.
And when the screen's vertical, it doesn't quite work.
Loses something, doesn't it? So there's actually applications that would suit that format that don't really work on other things.
Can't see a huge uptake for it, though.
No, it's a gimmicky thing. It's a nice to have.
But I think those that are wanting something a little bit different, and you know, maybe they're wanting something that'll, you know, have multiple uses. I mean, with these bigger screens, you use them maybe for watching a lot of video on. The touch screen is good for, you know, games and various sort of apps. You know, there's a situation where maybe you want a PC that you can watch stuff on. You know, maybe on a counter or a bench at home. Yeah. Maybe it's visible and usable from the counter, but maybe you can see it while you're cooking or doing something in the kitchen, you know, as well.
Good on HP for innovating. And mind you, I have to say that after what we've heard about Spectre, I'm frightened to ask what the price of it is.
Yeah, I need to check the prices on the different models.
I think if you have to ask, you can't afford it.
but I mean, this is an era, you know, where Samsung last year we saw some of their new products coming in and HP as well. Okay, so HP MV Recline Touch Smart all in one starts at $2,300 as the retail, and there's a Beats Audio edition at the same price, and then there's the top model there's a few different models, but there's another one that kicks off at $2,500, so.
It's not too bad, actually.
Yeah, so it's pricey, but it's not it's not necessarily over the top. And there's some cool little little things in there, like they've got near field communications capability, so you can tap a device in, like a smartphone or a camera potentially to be sharing photos and so on, just with a tap. So yeah, some of those things stand out, and I mean, it'll take a little bit of time to see what are the particular use cases for that technology. But I saw that NFC logo and spot on the base.
I saw that. So I thought point of sale actually.
Yeah, could be useful in a retail environment. Although these are more consumer oriented systems, but I'm sure we'll see use cases pop up in all sorts of directions. Well, I think that brings us to the end this week, Bill.
I think it does.
There's a chunk more we're going to catch up on over the next couple of weeks in terms of just looking back on some of the best devices of the year and some of the things that we'll be, putting online on our Christmas sort of gift guide or whatever you want to call it. We're going to have a list of some of the things. If you're looking out there wondering what to do at the end of the year, you've got some spare money burning a hole in your pocket or whatever the new electronic term is for that.
If you haven't bought the stuff already, you're doing it wrong.
Well, yeah, you should buy it the day it comes out, right, Bill?
No, but you buy it when you need it. Christmas, a lot of these things are tools. Having said that, guess what I buy my family?
Exactly. This time of year, I mean, there is a lot of technology bought. And and hey, I'm sure, it helps keep a lot of people in the retail space employed. So, we must do our part, mustn't we?
Yeah.
All right. Now, Bill, your content we can find online. Where are the places that we can find your journalism?
digitalwithoutana.co.nz is Excellent. My home site these days. There is a BillBennett.co.nz still going. You'll find it on Scoop. You'll find it on Geek Zone. And you can see my other stuff all over the shop.
Excellent, excellent. Well, keep up the good work reporting on what's happening in the technology world around New Zealand. We'll continue to look out for that. You can also track you down on Twitter. You're Bill Bennett NZ, right?
Yeah.
And you can track me down on Twitter, Paul Spain, and across the other social networks. And you can find NZ Tech Podcast at nztechpodcast.com and across Facebook and Twitter and so on as well. So well worth keeping connected with us on those channels, particularly over the over this time of year. There'll be bits and pieces of news that we'll share through those channels that may or may not, line up with podcasts. We'll be taking a little bit of a hiatus in between Christmas and then kicking back in pretty early in January with the Consumer Electronics Show, and we'll be reporting in from Las Vegas with that. But of course there'll be Boxing Day sales and the like, and so we'll be sharing if we come across anything we particularly recommend you get your hands on. So that's us. Thanks everyone for listening in. Catch you next week. See ya.